Tuesday, September 12th, 2023. I'd like to welcome citizens and applicants that are attending this evening in our auditorium, as well as those that have joined us online. I'd like to thank staff for preparing the packet for the commission this evening and for the presentations they'll present. And then just recognize that we have five of our six commissioners present this evening, so sufficient to run the business that we have. Our first item of business is a motion to approve our agenda as printed. Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to approve this evening's agenda as published.
Thank you, Commissioner Gedge. I'll second that. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay, our next item is to approve our minutes from our Planning Commission meeting on August 22nd, 2023. I assume everybody's had an opportunity to review those and submit any changes to staff. Any discussion on that? I'm ready for a motion then.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the minutes from the Planning Commission meeting August 22nd, 2023 as published.
Thank you, Commissioner Darby. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Okay. Staff, do you have any business for us this evening?
I just have one thing. You mentioned you have five out of six commissioners. Actually, you now only have five commissioners. Commissioner Starks has resigned from the Planning Commission. I got an email this afternoon, and I forwarded it on to you, so just before the meeting, so you probably didn't get it yet, but his reasons were related to work and so forth. That it's just too busy at that, and he wanted to be released, and he had emailed the mayor, and the mayor forwarded on to staff. Okay. So.
All right, thank you. And then are we still on for training before our meeting in 2 weeks?
I don't know if it's before or after. I'm not, it's
staff preference?
It's probably going to be after. Right now we only have one item on the agenda for next week, so probably just have it right after that one.
Sounds good. Okay. Commissioners, any issue with the scheduling of that? Okay, great. Then let's
recording in progress.
All right, Planning Commission. Ms. Bevins, do you have a city council report for us?
There was not a city council meeting because of the primary.
Okay.
So there has not been one.
Easy enough. Any other comments from the Planning Commission? Items of business? Okay. Great. Then we will jump in to our administrative public hearings. For those that are attending, both in person and online, the staff will present us a report. We will ask questions of staff and applicant as needed, and then for each of the items that we have on our agenda this evening, there will be an opportunity for public comment. Anybody that has joined us in person will be given a chance to address the commission first. You will come to the podium so that our records will pick up the recording of the proceedings. We ask that you please state your name and where you reside for our records, and then you'll have 3 minutes to address the commission and present any evidence that you've brought with you this evening. We'll give those that are attending online the same opportunity. We just ask that you turn on your camera and enable your audio. Same format, we ask that you state your name and where you reside for our records, and then you'll also have 3 minutes to address the commission. So with that, our first item of business is the Miners Cove North Preliminary Subdivision Plat, located at 10435 South, 2200 West. And Andrew has our staff report.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is a preliminary subdivision application right across from Bingham High School. The property exists today as you see it on this aerial with an existing building that holds two suites, Allman Dental Office and a dance studio. The zoning for the property is commercial neighborhood, so it still fits in line with what the zoning is meant for and what the owner has in mind for the property in the future with this division. This is a survey of what the property looks like today. Back in 2017, it was developed through a site plan being meets and bounds, creating the first building that you see of two units. That phased it into two phases. What you see is phase one, and that took care of the entire property with all improvements, landscaping, and as well as the underground infrastructure. Phase two is anticipated to follow with the subdivision of the property with a site plan application and then a new commercial tenant building permit. The existing building is approximately, give or take, 8,279 square feet, and we're anticipating another building that would be a little smaller than that to fit in what you see the open field that's there today, if you've driven by the corner. They developed the site with 64 parking stalls, which for the two uses that are there, there's an excess of 5 stalls. It's believed that the excess parking stalls, based upon the floor area ratio, are being rented out per se to high school students across the street by the owner, which will have to stop when the property is developed, as those stalls will be dedicated to those units entirely. The public comment was received prior to the night. There was one with Almond Dental and Empower Dance Academy. They complement each other quite well in terms of their hours of operation and the parking on who's there at what time of day. So parking isn't a concern for staff at this time. All of their activity is within enclosed buildings, and that's not anticipated to change. And they're all contained within their noise that is being mentioned in the comment that was forwarded to you. There isn't anything in our ordinance that prevents someone from not being able to be open on a certain day of the week or certain hours. We do have an ordinance that comes into play between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m., which is more restrictive towards certain equipment and the noise for operation and deliveries, which for the most part isn't applicable with the current uses here and what would be permitted within the zone for Lot 2. And in relation to Lot 2, the architectural design would be similar to what you do see presently on Building 1 today. In comparison. And so with that, staff is recommending approval.
Okay. Andrew, you made you shared some numbers I don't recall seeing in the staff report. One was that there were 64 parking spots currently, 5 in excess of what's required based on the current square footage, or the total once the second building is put in?
Based upon the current floor space of the existing building, just for the dance academy use and the dental office use.
So you're saying there's only 5 excess parking spots at this time for what's currently there?
If we use the floor space ratio, with a dance academy, you could also use 1 per 4 seats in your lobby. Staff isn't exactly sure of how many seats are in their lobby. Based upon plans that we have record of, it's possible they have roughly 8 or so seats, and most of their activity typically doesn't stay that full duration. Mm-hmm. And so presently it's not a huge concern, but with every use that comes in on the 2 units proposed on Building 2, we would look at the permitted uses and then what would we look at then.
Do you know what the use will be? Or could you give us an idea of what's permitted in this type of a zone? I'm not as familiar with this zone type.
With this particular property, the commercial neighborhood zone would permit a daycare, another dental or medical clinic, an office, personal services, which encompass like tattoo parlors, salons, tanning salons, professional services, which encompass legal firms, architect firms, general retail, and instructional training, which are dance academies, martial arts studios. It would allow for a gas station with a conditional use, along with like some sort of bank or credit union, lodging, telecommunication utilities, animal services, light services and repair. Churches, public safety, community services, and restaurants are all allowed via a conditional use process.
Mm-hmm. Commissioners, questions? Is Mr. Almond present this evening, the applicant? Do you have anything you would like to add to the staff report? You'll have to come to the microphone.
The only thing, I'm Jeff Holm, residing in South Jordan. Kind of what you touched upon on the parking issue. I currently, over the last 5 years, have been issuing parking permits to the high school, and we've been doing at least 30 parking spots per year, so I know that there's plenty of, we've never had an issue with parking, even with those parking spots being used. So I know that there's at least 30 parking spots, and I'd be happy to do a parking survey if needs be.
Do you know what type of application you anticipate going into this second building?
As of now, the dance studio is inquiring about more space. Mm-hmm. I also have been contacted about a minor school. I don't know much about it, but they do sublease from the dance studio one day a week on a Wednesday from 9 to 3:20 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So she has expressed interest of moving her school to that location, but we haven't talked very much about it.
With the way it's set up, do you anticipate you would be able to accommodate a drive-through type of drop-off pickup situation?
No, that's probably something I would need to look through with Andrew and the planning committee down the road. But mm-hmm. There were some issues in the beginning. I talked to the school. We've seemed to resolve that. It's very... they manage it very well in the morning as they drop off and pick up. They have someone standing on the 2200 West entrance, and they kind of just will let certain cars, only like four or five cars in at a time, they'll pick up the child, they'll leave, and then they'll allow another three or four or five cars. And so it's not like a big, huge line that's blocking my patients to the dental office, or it's never been an issue.
Okay. You said the dance studio is in talks with you for additional space. As I drove by this evening, Andrew had mentioned that all activities were contained within the buildings, but it did look like the dance classes spend time out on the grass, potentially as part of their class.
It's not part of their class. I think they just, when they take a break, they like to go out on the lawn and just take a break. But they've never held a class, I would say, out on the lawn, okay, per se. But they just seem to, it gets a little crowded in their... most of it's all dance studios, so there's not a lot of, when they have breaks, there's not a lot of place for them just to hang out, and so they'll kind of just stay out on the lawn for a few minutes, and then they go back in.
Do you happen to know how many chairs you have in your lobby?
My personal chair?
In the dance studio.
They have a number of benches, maybe enough for 15, 20 people.
Okay.
And then they do have some seating in each of the four studios that they have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Commissioners, questions?
Yes, so you just mentioned that you are currently leasing, renting out to this high school across the street.
Uh-huh.
If I think a concern for a lot of us is just the parking with the additional building. Would you be opposed if we further down in our discussion to eliminating or rescinding those leases?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
How many leases do you have issued for this school year?
Right now, 33. And they usually, on average right now, I'm not sure why, but I keep track of this. So they're probably only using about 18 to 22 per day. So I don't know where the other 10 are every day, but that's on average is what they're feeling each day.
Questions over here?
Is there a timeline on the putting in the new building?
No. The dance studios express, if they do commit, to try and have it done by next August or September, which I have no idea if that's even feasible. But so if I'm going to, if they commit, I would try to push towards that timeline if possible.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right, at this time I'm going to open up this item to public comment. If you have joined us this evening and would like to address the commission on this item, we'd invite you to come forward at this time.
And Madam Chair, before we get started, as Andrew mentioned, we did receive an email from a Mr. Dipka Patel, or Ms. Dipka Patel, earlier today with their concerns.
And that will be included in our public records.
Okay.
Is there anyone in the auditorium? We invite you to come forward.
My name is Todd Braithwaite, and I'm one of the houses behind this property. And this is probably just my ignorance, but is this just, obviously it's a new building on the property. The property is being, is part of it being sold off, or it's just creation of a new building with this existing owner owning the entire property plus buildings?
I will make notes of all questions, and we'll get those answered by staff after public comment has concluded. So do you have anything else you wanted to add? Or did you just want that question answered?
That's just a question I had about, because it wasn't clear to me. It was talking about subdividing the property. I didn't know what that meant as far as terminology.
We don't always either. So we'll get that answered after that, public comment.
That's totally fair. And my only other comment is, I mean, the current businesses seem to work very well with the community, and I would hope that the new businesses, if this does go through, I will say the dance studio did have out on the grass, an activity the other day that I saw, and I thought, well, that'll be a shame when that's gone, if that goes, but that's all I have to comment on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Braithwaite. Was there anyone else in the auditorium that would like to speak to this item?
Hi, I'm Marilyn Anderson, 10440 Plum Harvest Way. So our backyard backs up to Mr. Allman's property. And I have to say, he's been a great neighbor for several years. He's landscaped. It's beautiful. We do have some concerns about the smallness of the parking lot. I think he's being very optimistic about that as what we see from our backyard. When the preschool is on, even when the dance studio is on, the cars are backed up down 2200 and into our neighborhood. And I have seen more than five cars in that parking lot dropping kids off. So I guess we have a concern about that. We absolutely have a concern about what will be in there. It is our neighborhood. He doesn't reside there. He works there. And so we hear tattoo parlor and things, gas station, those kinds of things. And that concerns us as neighbors. So I think for us, it just would depend on what was there. But I do say he's been a great, great neighbor. And his place is beautiful, and we've enjoyed having it behind us. But I do think that there is some issues with the parking that maybe we aren't being realistic about. That's anything else? We have a little group of us here.
And you're all welcome to come up. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Is there anyone else? Please.
Hello. My name is Bart Honus, and I reside at 10471. South Plum Harvest Way in the same neighborhood with the other people here. When this was presented originally, they did mention that the plan was to put up another building there, and it sounds like that the building is being planned so that it will be the same sort of aesthetic structure as the original one, which I think is very nice. I'd also like to express, I also did not know whether this was a sale of property to someone else or not, because of how it was worded as being a subdivision or subdivided. So I would also like that cleared up. I want the council to know I would be very opposed to a tattoo parlor, to a gas station, to a restaurant in this area. I don't think that's very appropriate for there. I hope that that's nothing that's being planned, but do you know, well, another question is, do you know what the ordinances are on lighting that is the amount of light put off by commercial structures in a neighborhood area? It's quite bright all night, so I hope that the new building doesn't add additional brightness to that, and I'd prefer to see what's there toned down a bit. But just to reiterate what Marilyn said, I think Mr. Allman's been, the use of the property that's there now is just fine, and he's been a good neighbor for us. So I guess that's it. Thank you.
And we will get your question answered.
Thank you.
Are there others in the auditorium that would like to address the commission? Okay, we're going to go to our online format. If you've joined us online and would like to speak to this item, we just ask that you turn on your camera, give me a physical wave, and I will give you the floor. You can also use the little raise hand feature to catch my attention. Okay, I'm not seeing anybody online. I'm going to come back to the auditorium. Last chance to address the commission on this item. All right, I'm going to close the public comment and bring this back to the commission. Staff, we have a couple of questions to answer. Could you please define what's being considered this evening, what this subdivision means as far as ownership and what happens with the property? And could you also throw in what goes on with the parking as far as joint agreement and how that will work between the two properties?
All right. As far as lot ownership goes, staff is unsure if the applicant is setting himself up in the future to potentially sell off and recuperate some costs, to where it kind of makes ownership a little bit easier to deal with that when you have two separate lots.
So this is creating two separate lots.
Correct.
That could in the future both be sold to different owners, one be sold to a new owner.
Right.
But then we address the parking and how that will work in the future.
Parking is based upon a ratio assigned to the use. So it would depend on who wants to come in with their tenant improvement permits and what would need to be done there. Based upon how it was being described with the dance studio having seating in their studio rooms and in their lobby, we would be able to reduce their parking requirement with the 1 per 4 seats and opening up more spaces for all 4 units on the property. And the recording of the plat would establish shared access between the two existing points, which wouldn't change. There isn't any shared parking agreement in place. You still have to meet your requirements for whatever you need, whatever ratio it may be, for whatever site that you have.
Okay, I think I missed that. So there's not a shared agreement. So this subdivision will have how many parking spots associated with it?
Right now there's 64.
But when we subdivide, do each property take a certain number with no shared agreement between the two?
There would be roughly 10 for the dentist office and roughly, going off of the floor ratio, 49 for the dance studio. But we could reduce that if we were able to get an exact number of what's going on the inside.
For the existing use, but the new building, could require another 10 plus 49 depending on, or more depending on what the use is, correct?
Yeah, it would depend on the use, and that is something we would look at during and the
is there
the
enough, I guess, land for the total two part, proposed two parcels to accomplish an additional 50 to 70 parking stalls?
All right, we would look at the parking in relation to who wants to do what at the time and if it's feasible. We do tend to overpark on our ratios. Right now, we haven't been receiving complaints on the activity to have a high concern right now. If that changes, we, of course, would circle back to what we would need to do in relation to if, say, a daycare, since it is a permitted use, staff would look into digging deeper into their operations and what plans they have set up to handle those situations as if it was a CUP process where we would typically require those items.
I'm still missing something. You said there's not a shared parking agreement. So how do you decide which property owns which spots? You're saying that the city's going to come in every time there's a new use and mediate this? That's very unusual.
We just look at the ratio in relation to the use. There wasn't an agreement that I could find on record or recorded against the property that would
It appears that on the subdivision line, it goes across the property, and that there will be about 14 parking spaces on the new lot to the north, and the rest will remain on the south lot. So that's without an agreement that technically that the new, you know, the owner of the south lot could prohibit the owner of the new lot, any of that business that the new building, prohibit them from parking, using his parking, his or her parking spaces.
So would that then come with a requirement for additional handicap spots out of those 14?
I think that includes, well, there is one handicap spot. I'm not sure if it includes that or the other side of that stripe line on that drawing. But yes, they would probably have to have an additional handicap spot.
So based on the way this is drawn and being subdivided, the existing building will not meet the parking requirement of its square footage anymore because Andrew said that they only have 5 over what's required, and this is going to take, it looks like, 14.
If that's the case, if they're required, based on the current building, if they're required to have a certain number, they have to maintain that certain number, or they probably should not. I don't think you can. Subdivision probably could not occur unless there's a shared parking agreement involved with the subdivision.
Mr. Simonson, maybe I'm missing something. It sounds like you.
Well, I think it's just
set me right.
there's no need to set you right. I think you're asking great questions, but some of the nuances of development going to one. I can't remember who it was, question about what a subdivision is. Here's what the law is in Utah. A subdivision is defined as any land that is divided into two or more lots for the purpose for offer, sell, lease, or development. So that can show up in a lot of ways. In our neighborhoods where our houses are, all the lots are, and homes are separately owned and so forth. But oftentimes in a commercial neighborhood zone such as this one, the same owner will own several lots and lease out to different businesses. Now, I could be wrong that the applicant may want to clarify on this, but it sounds to me like he wants to have the dental office in one space and he wants to have perhaps an expansion of the dance studio in the other, and he can permit parking across those property lines at any time because he owns them both. And I don't know, you know, so even though there's not a, as far as we are aware, a written shared parking agreement at this time, I think we could ask the owner, but my sense is that's what he's anticipating, that he's continuing to own both of those parcels and will permit parking in both of those. But you may want to get clarification on that.
So, Mr. Simonson, just to follow up from my understanding, if he were to develop it 10 years down the road, sell one of those two subdivided pieces of property, at that time, they would need to do two things: sign a shared parking agreement, or they would each have their own assigned parking spots based on the subdivision. Is that correct?
That's correct. And so if at that point one of the properties does not have sufficient parking to meet the code, then they're in violation of the code and they need to do something to get that to come into compliance.
Thank you.
Maybe this is a larger question, but really from a subdivision perspective, maybe Andrew, let me think who best to do. Let's start with you, Andrew, and you can route. Because we're just talking about the subdivision today and the requirements for a subdivision, not necessarily business operation. I don't know if our standard of review would encompass the operating viability of another. I don't know. I'd be interested to see if that's part of the standard of review. So that's probably for Mr. Simonson. But my question is like, if it's just the subdivision requirements, it's just we're basically dividing this lot into two so that it can be two separate tax lots, essentially, registered at the county, owned by separate people or the same. And so there's a variety of reasons, as Mr. Simonson said, for why a business owner may want to subdivide. Do you know if we can encompass the previous operating business requirements into a subdivision? Or is this more of a compliance issue?
With the requirements of a subdivision, the application satisfies those. But it sounds like what you're asking is more inclined to what we would look at on a site plan application, mm-hmm. on how the site's mm-hmm. going mm-hmm. to be developed, which most of it has already been done. And right now we can just anticipate another fire hydrant and stuff to deal with the fire department. But most of what planning and building engineering look at have been taken into account with when the first site plan went in a couple years ago. With a new building on a separate lot that's anticipated to be smaller, so depending on what we would see with that application, whether they're consistent with what we can anticipate from the previous site plan or if they want to change their designs, now, after approval for site plan application, then we would start to look at how the site looks like in relation to what we would need, what we're anticipating from uses, and then specifically look into that when whoever wants to come in on their tenant improvement permits and see what you do have. Even if that means that however you develop your building on your site plan removes A, B, and C from the uses that you're able to do because of what we can anticipate the uses at the time requiring on their parking ratios, at whatever ratios are in place at the time, which if they develop 10 years down the line, we could be consistent or have completely rewritten those ratios.
Okay. Thank you. So just to follow up on the site plan, with this, the next step, if this were to go through as a subdivision, site plan be handled administratively by city staff, or would that come before us as the Planning Commission again?
With approval tonight, they would still have to do a final subdivision application approved by the city engineer. To set up the site plan would come back to you for approval, and then it would go back to city oversight on the building permit for the new building.
Great. And then just confirm also, if they were to do one of those conditional uses that you listed, that would be a whole separate application that would come before this body. if it was permitted, it wouldn't, because that would just, it's already allowed. But if it was a conditional use like the gas station and or tattoo parlor, those are conditional use and would have to come back with another public hearing. So the public would be involved in that.
Okay. And with uses that are permitted, we do have a provision that allows us to request additional information similar to if we were processing a CUP if we had those concerns.
Great. And then just, I hate to go back to the parking, but one of our things is that the application has to either meet city ordinances or water requirements or sewer or culinary. And so just with city ordinances and where we're talking about 64 current stalls, which is five over what's required for the current one building only, with the subleasing of 30 to 33 lots to high schoolers, does that further reduce what's truly permitted for the two current businesses occupied? And then, of course, from a city compliance ordinance issue, is that an allowed practice in this type of zone? And does that need to be addressed?
I had the same concern. In our staff report, the findings are that the subject property meets city code requirements, and it doesn't sound like it does.
Yeah.
Once you've cut off 14 spots, and maybe we're just being fussy, but that's the thing people get the maddest at us about is when there's not a traffic plan, and then it queues up on a road. So actually, while we're on this topic, Jeremy, I'm going to come to you. We've had businesses that have queues onto public roads. Were you aware that this happens at this site, that it queues onto 2200 West, and then I assume around the corner onto Amber Blossom Way?
I've not received any complaints on that, no.
What is the procedure that a citizen should follow should they see that happening where a public access is being blocked? And what would you recommend? What would the steps be should a neighbor contact to express this concern with traffic queuing out onto the road at a business?
If there's a traffic concern, the residents are always welcome to reach out to engineering, to me, to Jeremy Nielsen, and I can look into it. And then the traffic committee ultimately reviews, you know, any traffic issues and would respond to any concerns.
What would that look like? Let's say in the case where obviously a pickup drop-off plan is needed, would the applicant be required to submit one for the city to review to see if it could alleviate? What does that process look like?
Well, pickup drop-off plans are usually required, and maybe Greg can help me. I believe it, as part of the approvals for like a daycare, you know, they're submitted, you know, and so then that would be the first thing we'd look at is we'd pull their pickup drop-off plan and see if they're following that. And then if they are following it and there's still issues, then we would meet with the owner of the property and develop some recommendations to try and fix any problems.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
I think so. I'm just concerned. There's a property over by Commissioner Gedge that we've reviewed a couple times on 104th. It's kind of a strip mall area, and it seems like once something is approved in a location, it's always approved, and we can't rescind that even when we run into these parking issues. And so that's, I think, why it's of concern to me tonight, is we have run into properties where it's obviously not sufficiently parked, but our hands are tied. We have to continue to let a restaurant be in that space because they've received a conditional use permit, or we have to continue to allow the martial arts studio or whatever. Even though once we add up all of the different uses, it's obviously underparked.
Well, we have Jeremy. Can I just ask a follow-up? Any concerns, I don't see in the staff report, but with accessing with, you know, we're going to need additional parking stalls onto with that traffic onto 2200 West or South Jordan Parkway, especially during high school pickup drop-off times or other events that it might be at the high school? Any concerns with the increased traffic flow? I'm assuming it's going to have off South Jordan Parkway, right in, right out. But off of 2200 West, any concerns with actual access to the city streets?
No, we didn't have any concerns with this.
Okay, we have a couple of more questions.
Madam Chair, can I ask one more question? Mm-hmm. Andrew, a site plan can a site plan encompass more than one subdivision? Commercial site plan?
Well, specifically, it would be for how you intend to develop lot two. But we would be able to ask the applicant how they intend to like incorporate into their existing adjacent lot one, just to kind of get a bigger picture of how they've worked things through.
let me ask maybe a little differently. Assuming that we didn't have building one or the parking lot, and let's just say this all came as, can one, could one site plan encompass both of these parcels?
Once they're subdivided, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, assuming they were subdivided first and someone said, oh, I want to come in and build these two. The reason I'm asking that is because that's kind of the end state that we're talking about today, is it would be subdivided, but it had one site plan where we addressed certain things. The next time the next site plan comes in, then we have to go back and say, well, you've got 14 park, you know, whatever. There's a certain amount that we can control or influence from this perspective, and there's a whole lot that happens through feedback from going to remediate issues from like engineering, or there's compliance issues that we can do that way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to figure out where we are on that. And so I thought I've seen before site plans that had multiple tenants, we've had multiple parcels. I just couldn't remember if that was still true.
Usually it's one site plan per lot or per pad.
Okay.
Sometimes it would take, depending on what the applicant wants to do, it would take discussion with what we could do and what code requires and what's kind of going on in the circumstances. Kind of like how, if this was still a residential property, meets and bounds, it would be an SRD instead of a prelim. If someone wanted to do two houses that were side by side and there still meets and bounds, we could do one application for both to get them into development standards. So it would kind of depend upon what exactly an applicant wants to do and the circumstances involved.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about lighting. Can you confirm that for this property, the lighting ordinances were followed, that after everything was installed, that it was measured, that everything's directed correctly and meeting the requirements?
Code requires shielding on the lights,
mm-hmm.
All of that was approved when this went back in 2017. No additional lighting is expected. Nothing's to change other than subdividing the lot. And then the only changes we anticipate on the site with a site plan is an additional fire hydrant at this time to service the two buildings. As far as landscaping, additional landscaping, lighting, and other items like that. Everything from what we can tell with the previous approvals is compliant. If there's a concern that something may not be, a complaint can be made and we can investigate as to what the site looks like and what was approved.
So that can be verified if somebody has concern that it's not meeting ordinances.
Right.
Can I just follow up on that real quick? So I'll just, here's your op landscaping. And so, you know, the current lot, as when it was approved, it obviously has the approved landscape plan and green space. However, by subdividing this and basically getting rid of the grass field, which people are doing activities on, does that eliminate the required city ordinance for the existing building that will become, you know, new lot one? And lot two, will they both be, you know, separately able to meet the minimum standards for the landscape plan?
They should. None of the street trees in the park strips or landscaping in the plantings, the planter beds on site are changing, nor are they in the area where the building would go. The site was developed as if the building would be there and no changes would be needed. Set itself up pretty well.
And this is probably for Jeremy, but is that current grass field a flood detention basin?
No, it's not.
Just wanted to make sure.
Is there any sort of maximum coverage limit in this zone? I know that in residential zones, you can only cover up to a certain percentage of your property. This is obviously going to cover up essentially all of it between the parking lot and the two buildings.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but usually In the commercial zones, no. It's more so your setback from the right-of-way.
That's correct. There is no maximum lot coverage on commercial zones. There are certain setbacks from residential properties, agricultural properties, and then also a setback from streets and so forth. Those things had to be met. But otherwise, and they also have to have quite a number of parking spaces, so if they plan too big of a building and they don't have enough parking or something, then they would have to reduce the size of the building and so forth. But there is no maximum coverage limit in commercial zones in that case. And in this case, it looks like, you know, the grass area, if a building is built, it will just cover the grass area. That mm-hmm. grass area wasn't required. It was required to be maintained, and thought that was the easiest way to maintain it, is to have it as grass rather than trying to mow down weeds forever. So,
no, and I do appreciate that that's what they chose to do in the interim between the two phases of development. Commissioners, any additional questions? Did I get everything answered from public comment? Discussion? I'm still concerned about the parking. I'm not sure how to proceed without, I guess, potentially being presented with.
If we just add, you know, in the motion to say that all city ordinances are met, would that satisfy that the parking ratios are satisfied? If we had that as part of the motion, or do we need to say that there has to be an executed parking agreement or minimum city requirements?
I don't know, because I feel like just granting it will put them out of compliance unless Andrew can go back and verify with a different calculation.
Or they can have the new lot could have five spots, right?
I suppose.
Or so.
But I think he can sign a thanks. I think he can sign a shared parking agreement, and until a building actually is proposed, he needs parking still, no matter what we do.
That's true.
So if we approve the subdivision, he can just
with
self-deal.
With a parking agreement in place.
But he doesn't have to have one because he owns both. And so yeah. I think legally he's not required to have one because he owns both. He can just say, yeah, I'm allowing people to use both parking lots. Yeah, if he sold it, he may have to have one.
And that's correct. Subdividing the property doesn't mean it goes to somebody else automatically. He has, and I believe Mr. Simonson explained that you know, they're dividing the property, but he's still going to own both, and so he can allow parking that he needs to use for his businesses and the businesses that are in the dance studio to cross over into the other lot because he owns both.
So the parking, even though it could legitimately be a concern in the future,
but that will come.
It would come if someone else bought it and developed the property, or if he develops the property. At that point, he'll have to answer those questions. Okay. But up until then, it's just a subdivision.
Is there a...
I think.
Is there a clear way to specify, though, when he goes to sell this subdivision, that owner...
I don't think you can require future behavior. Okay. I think it just is, if he decides to sell it, then at that point, the law takes effect and he has to meet his obligations.
I guess I just want to make sure this gets flagged in the future to be reviewed thoroughly so that we don't create a parking issue.
But if I bought the property from him, I wouldn't be able to develop the property unless I could answer the parking issues. So,
well, but I would argue you bought the property and you could claim I bought 14 spots.
Correct.
This is on you.
And it would put him in a bind, but that's not my problem anymore because I own the property.
This guy's going to help us.
Yeah.
Well, all I'm going to do is quote to you from the standard of approval on the report, the last sentence. The Planning Commission may approve with conditions, or if the project does not meet the city ordinances or sanitary sewer or culinary water requirements, deny the preliminary subdivision plat application. So, while I agree with Commissioner Darby that in general you can't control the future, but I think that there's options for you, especially with the words approve with conditions.
So you could just add the condition that it meets.
That he meets his parking requirements.
The statutory ordinances are met for both properties per city code.
Yeah.
That works. Is there further discussion?
Yeah. Are parking agreements registered with the property?
Recorded.
Yeah, recorded.
They certainly can be. I don't know of any requirement that they be.
Okay. And so if the current owner were to sell this new subdivision, it would be the due diligence of both parties around this compliance, absent anything else. Is that correct? Like, he'd have to be aware, in this case, the current applicant would have to be aware of if he sold it, that he would lose those parking lots and the control of it, and the other person would have to realize what they would have.
So I hate to assume that the other person would realize, because we saw that for building development where the other builder took up the square footage that was agreed to.
Right, that's what I'm saying, it'd be the due diligence for the respective owners to understand their impacts for a sale of one, where you have go from one owner to two. And I don't know if we have the ability to do anything there, especially if there's no requirement to like register it with the plat.
I think we generally see those shared parking agreements come in at the site plan stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hesitate to put any specific language in a subdivision approval where we don't have any information on site plan at this point. I think that's something that we can strongly encourage the applicant to come with at a site plan approval level. But I hesitate to include anything other than the language that Commissioner Gedge suggested.
From last meeting, just my blanket statement I'm going to add moving forward.
I think it would be okay to include some specific language in your motion so that when this gets reviewed for a site plan, it's hopefully captured.
I'd like to make an attempt at a motion, please. And I would like to thank the applicant for actually continuing to think of South Jordan and actually doubling the size of number of businesses and wanting us to be here. So hopefully that our discussion doesn't reflect negatively on that. But based on that, based on this evening's discussion and staff report and testimony from the public, I move that the Planning Commission approve the Miners Cove North Preliminary Subdivision Plat, file number PLPP 2023-00048, with the following condition that all South Jordan City requirements pertaining to site plan and parking regulations and standards are satisfied.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have any discussion on that motion?
And Chair, my only question about that would be in the language we talked about requirements, site plan requirements versus maybe subdivision requirements. And this isn't a site plan, this is a subdivision application.
I would like to amend my motion to replace the word site plan with subdivision.
Does that also deal with parking? Because there are no parking conditions on the subdivision as well. Unless I'm wrong, there are no
parking. Or would you like me just to strike the last part and say that all South Jordan City requirements are satisfied?
I think that makes me much more comfortable.
So I'd like to reverse and strike as stated with the condition that all South Jordan City requirements are satisfied.
Are you okay with that? Did you catch it? Sorry.
It's on the recording.
So. Okay, perfect. I like that. All right, do we have any discussion on that motion? We're good. Okay, I'll second that motion. Ms. Valdez?
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Catwell?
Aye.
Commissioner Darby?
Yes.
And Commissioner Bell.
Aye. Okay, this item passes 5-0. I'd like to thank Mr. Allman for being here this evening. Thank you for allowing us to do our due diligence and being present so that you can answer questions. I'd also like to thank all of the neighbors that came out to present information. We always appreciate and feel like we can cover concerns better when they're presented by those that are most impacted. by what's happening. I hope it was clear, but in the future there will be a site plan that will again come before this commission. You will again be noticed. Am I saying this correctly? Sometimes you look at me and I worry that I'm lying. So this will again be reviewed by this commission, and we will very much be aware of the concerns that were brought this evening and be looking for that. And so I guess that's also a word for Andrew to be prepared. So I would like to thank everybody for your participation this evening on this item.
Mr. Simons.
Yes.
Can I know this is unusual, but as a courtesy to some of the neighbors, make one comment that
please.
I hope might be helpful to them. There was some concern about, oh no, we don't want a tattoo parlor and so forth. That wasn't an issue tonight because that's a zoning issue. What zone, what are permitted in what zones? And so this is a commercial neighborhood zone, and Mr. McDonald, Andrew McDonald at the first went over some of the things that are permitted in that zone. But it's a very easy thing to go into online on the city code and the zone, all the different zoning, all the different zones have a list of what's permitted in that zone. So if you go home, bring up the city, go to the city website, bring up the city code, and go to Title 17, you can look up commercial neighborhood zone and find out everything that is permitted in that zone. And I don't have that memorized, but I think you're going to find that tattoo parlor is not listed there, and some of the other things that you're concerned about probably won't be listed there. But that's an easy way to relieve your anxiety. And so I just wanted to say that with the hopes that you didn't go home and lose sleep, that you're going to have some undesired use coming in next to you.
Mr. Simonson, if I may clarify on that before we move on. Specifically to assist you in that, Title 17.18.020 will outline what's permitted by right and by CUP in any zone. And then Title 17.18.060 will cover the definitions of what those uses mean. Earlier, permitted uses is allowed in this zone. It's defined as establishments primarily engaged in providing services of a personal use, commonly associated with, but not necessarily that's what's going to happen, beauty and barber shops, clothing and rental, dry cleaners and laundry facilities, massage therapy, portraits and photography, tanning salon, and tattoo parlors. Those are just commonly associated uses with personal services that could be there, but not necessarily that what's going to happen at that point in time when someone wants to come in.
So you may have a concern. And so what do responsible citizens do if they don't like something that could come in the future? They get on the phone and they call their city councilman and ask them to maybe make a change.
And just to be clear, that's not us. We're the Planning Commission. We are not elected. We do not have nearly the ability to make change or authority that they do. So what Mr. Simonson is correct, you should call your city council representative if you've got a concern. We're very limited. One more thing, Mr. Almond, and I don't know, Andrew, if you'll end up with the site plan. I would just highly recommend that a traffic plan and parking plan be included in that site plan, because that, I'm sure, will be the number one concern based on what we saw tonight. Okay, we're good on this item. Okay. Thanks again for the participation this evening. We know this can sometimes be somewhat of a belabored process, but we do appreciate citizen feedback. All right, our other item this evening is the King's Landing Preliminary Subdivision Plat, located at 10828 South, 1055 West, and Andrew's doing double duty. He has our staff report again.
All right, this one's gonna look a little familiar. It's formerly known as the Hatch Subdivision, so if you can recall from earlier this year, this is some of the property that was involved in the rezone to set up for this. We are just further past the rise development in Ashcroft Acres at the end of 1055, where the right-of-way switches from public right-of-way to where it becomes private onto six homes that go past that point. Recalling that we rezoned the larger piece to an R1.8 to be more consistent with the already zoned R1.8 pieces for this property. The applicant is proposing to divide this land into six lots, all single family. As you can kind of see, lots 3 through 5 are half acre, and lots 1 and 2 are 0.8 and some change. So they meet the minimum requirements for the zone, plus a little larger lots than what would be required. The zoning on our 1.8 is 1.8 units per acre on the restriction. Gross density is 1.45, net is 1.65. The applicant is proposing 6 lots, with the size of the property and the zoning, you could do 7 at max, but it is 6, consistent with the concept plan that you saw earlier this year. King's Landing Court will be how you get to lots 3 through 5, and a private drive will be how you get to lots 1 and 2. King's Landing Court will be public right away. And the private drive will be maintained by lots 1 and 2. The overall site plan of the property for the subdivision shows 1055 will be fully improved with a 55-foot right away. The west half of it will be dedicated with this project, and there is another project for the east half, which will fill in the gap. The knuckle that you kind of see where it curves into King's Landing Court serves to help distinguish the end of the public right-of-way to where it becomes private and end of city maintenance, but it also helps city maintenance and operations have snow removal, have a better place to put it, have more room to maneuver, and reduce the incidences of damage to private property with how large they are and how little room there is down there, and to give them better access into that subdivision. The thicker line that you see on lots 1 and 2 going across them on the east, and then in the top left corner is a retaining wall, which shown here, lots 1 and 2 will be retained by a 9-foot wall. They'll sit roughly 10 to 20 feet higher than the rest of the lots. One of the concerns from the rezone was the grading of the property. From 1055 west to the west boundary of the property, it increases about 55 feet. Most of it is done at the edge of lots 1 and 2. In order for the applicant to make that work and still be under 10% grade for fire requirements, they have to elevate the property, but they also have to elevate 1055 west roughly 2.5 feet to make grade work, as you're seeing it proposed here. Another concern that was presented during the rezone period was how lots 1 and 2 are designed kind of opposite of what would be a front and a rear yard. And so the concern was, as cars come and go up the private driveway, their headlights would be glaring into the adjacent neighbor's rear yards and their windows. The retaining wall that you see retains that property line about roughly 5 to 10 feet higher than where you're at on the road. And that west line and south line of the subdivision by code require a solid masonry fence. In this case, a Rhino Rock is being proposed. And staff feels that with the difference between where you're at in the road, where the retaining wall's at, and then the height of the fence should be sufficient to help ease concerns of at least screening that light or blocking it from shining directly into these yards or being at equal grade with that. The masonry fence is required because of the incompatible use and zoning. The adjacent subdivisions to the west and south are R2.5. But the property to the north is still zoned agriculture, and the existing vinyl fences to remain. The lots 3 and 4, if they wanted to, could put up a fence of their own to whatever they like at a 6-foot max. If they wanted to on their side of the line, that's entirely up to them. You're not required to have a fence, but the existing fencing for the northern boundary is staying the same on the vinyl. This shows the, it's an enlargement of the grading plan, but specifically this shows the stormwater drainage of the project. This portion of 1055 doesn't have a stormwater system in the road. And so the applicant is proposing to, at the edge of King's Landing Court, catch the water and then direct it over to a detention basin that you can see pictured here that's off-site on currently property that the applicant owns, but will become, with a different project, another private lot. And then from there, it'll discharge into Beckstead Ditch, which the city does control. And engineering is still reviewing the needed information for that discharge and still reviewing the stormwater agreement and easement, which are included in the packet as a draft on what would be required, outlining who's responsible for what for both city and whoever in the future takes ownership of that lot on what's expected of them, and outlining what will be recorded against the property so that they show up on their title that there is something to be aware of when buying this property. Overall, their utility plans, fire has required a hydrant be centralized on 3 and 5, lots 3 and 5. Lots 1 and 2 have it a water line pulled up the private drive, as you can see, and a fire hydrant will be somewhere up there. Its location hasn't been approved yet by the fire department. That's still in review. But in then relation to the sewer plans, lots 1 and 2, this shaded thicker line that you can see running through lots 1 and 2 is an existing sewer easement from South Valley that they're stubbing into. The remainder lots, the applicant will have to install a new section from the Rosemond University property following this path into 1055 to create that loop. And the project would tie into that. Because that construction requires somehow going under Beckstead Ditch and also having to close 1055 West, the applicant is required to maintain access to the 6 residential homes that go beyond south of the construction. No options have been approved yet. Their ideas have been proposed. The most preferred option would be to, on what would be lot 5, build a temporary road to engineering and fire department standards so that residents can go around and bypass the construction. Preferred route, because it's this, most similar to how it looks right now, in case any services did have to be called upon or any services from another city came to provide, it wouldn't be a big surprise or reduce the delay that it would take. Another option would be, you can kind of see where it says pipe crossing storm drain, there's a squared parcel that is owned by Rosemond University. There has been conversation with Rosemond University and the applicant and the city to kind of work together on how to do this. If that was the option that it would be, they are open to allowing temporary access via their parking lot on their property to these homes while that construction is taking place, emphasizing temporary and still being that access still being designed to fire and engineering standards. The recommendation in the report is a little different with new information that's been provided since this report was submitted for the packet to be finalized. And so, for the record, staff is recommending approval of the application subject to all city code requirements being met before a final subdivision application will be approved and construction on the subdivision is allowed to commence. This recommendation is also subject to resolving these still outstanding items listed in the notice of revisions included with the report, which includes, one, the included draft of the stormwater agreement and easement is to be finalized, approved by the engineering department, and recorded against the property, which is addressed 10827 South, 1055 West, which is the address of that off-site detention basin property. Number two, the building department issues the required retaining wall permit that was pending review at the time this report was submitted. Construction on the retaining wall is not to commence without an issued grading permit, and the final submittal of the civil plans for the subdivision have been approved by the city engineer. Number three, the final location of the fire hydrant for lots 1 and 2, as discussed before, is to be reviewed and approved by the fire department. Number four, the reviews of the water and sewer plans, water model, and storm drain report calculations for discharge of stormwater into Bexex Ditch are to be finalized and approved by the engineering and public works department. Number five, a temporary detour access and traffic plan that maintains continuous access for residents that live on 1055 West south of the construction is to be finalized and approved by the engineering and fire departments. And number six, an encroachment permit is to be issued by the engineering department for the construction of the sewer line that will cross 1055 West before any construction is allowed to commence.
So, Madam Chair, can I just ask a question? So, is there a reason with these six additional items why we are seeing this item tonight and why this is not being tabled or recommended for tabling until those are actually all resolved? Are we jumping the gun in hearing this item this evening before those are all resolved? I mean, what's the honestly the push to get this on tonight's agenda?
The decision was a joint decision between the city engineer and the director of the planning department to allow it to be presented tonight, explicitly outlining in the report and our recommendation what still needs to be taken care of between your possible approval tonight and approval of the final application.
I would hate to open a public hearing, still have these six items that are potentially not resolved. And then, so just my gut feeling, I hate, the people who did come out tonight, but I don't think this is ready to be heard. But that's just my feeling, and I'm on just 1 of 5.
I have the same concerns and had planned to ask the same question. I thought it might be a case, though, like indicated, that didn't want to go through the cost and hassle without knowing they would get approval.
There's a bunch of city ordinances, and I'm sure if we did open a public hearing, well, there's a lot of questions that I wouldn't be able to give a favorable vote for. So that's just my opinion.
Any other thoughts?
I was going to ask the same question.
We could probably use some advice, Mr. Simonson. Look at that face.
The well is dry on this one. That's a decision you're going to have to make.
This is hard. It's a complicated property. I drove out to it today, and I'm glad that you had the grading map. I didn't understand it before. I do have one question for you, Andrew, just to make sure I understand it right. That private lane that goes to lots 1 and 2 is done the way it is so that I assume you're kind of up on flat ground where the driveways and home accesses are. So you drive up a big hill and then it levels out. So they're up at the, on top of the crest.
Right.
Okay.
Both the drive and the public right of way are barely under 10%. So from that private drive, it's a little steep, it flattens out and then it kind of increases a little bit as you get up onto 1 and 2.
What is the commission thinking? I hate to have had so many turn out and to waste their time. I'm inclined to have the applicant come and tell us why the timing for this now before so many questions are answered. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Do we legally have to have a public hearing tonight since it was noticed? If we table something?
That's a great question, and I believe that you should have a public hearing because it has been noticed. And I would just make one additional comment. I think we have the finest city planner and the finest city engineer anywhere, and they have sent it to you. With this list, and so you just need to consider that they have considered that carefully, and they've sent it to you tonight.
Okay.
Can I ask Andrew questions before we bring up the applicant?
Sure.
Okay. Sorry, Andrew. I've got all the questions. Okay. So number one, this retention basin. Is it an open retention basin, or is that underground?
Drew, do you want me to answer
that? I guess that would be for Jeremy.
It's open. It's an open pond.
Okay. And then number two, so that's on a different lot or subdivision that Mr. Hatch owns.
Right.
When that develops, do we know yet where that will come off of 1055 West? Like on this drawing that we're looking at, do we know where along this road are we going to come straight off of King's, whatever this street is, or is it going to be further up on 1055?
The developing properties?
Mm.
The basin itself is on one of those properties and would require an easement that would outline the responsibilities of the owner for the surface, the maintaining like landscaping, debris, and then what the city would be responsible for the infrastructure beneath. The what's addressed here is 10827 South for both of these two parcels. In the future, are they're being done as an SRD application because they're meets and bounds. The property lines have been adjusted, so it's more of a the top 10827 has its 20-foot wide access, and the lot opens up in the back, and then so it makes the bottom lot a little wider to kind of help develop these properties a little bit more, knowing that basin is on that property and kind of restricts what you can do.
Okay, so we're not looking at multiple homes on these two lots, though. They're just like individual lots with driveways coming off of them as access to those lots, correct?
Right, these two will just be one per lot.
Okay, and then what is the anticipated duration of construction for the road being closed and needing a temporary access?
I do have the applicant here that can verify and clarify a little bit more. As I recall from conversation, it was 2 or 3 weeks, give or take.
Okay. The rest can wait.
Is that necessary because they're raising the road? Or is it because of the water, diverting the water? Why does the road have to be closed? I didn't fully understand.
To bring in the new sewer line connection to service this development, and what also be with these two SRD lots as well.
Okay.
The sewer's quite deep, and it's right in the 1055 West alignment, so it'd take up the whole road to construct.
Okay. Could you explain a little more about the 2.5-foot raising of the road? Why is that necessary?
They need to raise 1055 up a little bit in order to make the six lots and the grade of the road comply with fire's 10% or less requirement. So to meet what you're seeing in the, so So to accomplish what you're seeing here, they have to raise 1055 up a little bit to make it work and comply.
Just the section up to the knuckle?
The section that you're seeing on this diagram adjacent to the property of where King's Landing Court would curve.
From there to there.
And mm-hmm. parts of Lot 4 to help keep that relatively consistent so it's not so sudden and still meet requirements of engineering and fire.
And how does that impact how it connects to the private lane beyond it? How does it come back down to the current elevation?
For off of King's Landing Court?
Off the knuckle.
To the south.
So now I've got a 2.5-foot jump.
I can jump here in here if you'd like. So yeah, they need to raise that 1055 2.5 feet where the road's veering to the west, just because they're right now they're just less than 10% grade. And so if they don't raise it to 2.5 feet, then they exceed that slope, and it's just it doesn't meet our requirements.
Sure. I'm just trying to verify that they're not adversely impacting any other portion of the road to get what they need.
Sorry, I'm getting to your question. Okay. Yeah. So then going further to the south, they're gonna slope it down to where the existing grade of the road is, and it'll be a gradual slope, to connect the two roads. So that there's not like an abrupt curve or anything.
And how does that impact the properties to the east? Are they suddenly going to have?
There'll be some fill that'll slope down. 2.5 feet of fill on the road. I mean, it'll build the road up 2.5 feet, and then there'll be a slope of dirt coming down.
In addition to that. South of this detention basin and east of Lot 5 currently is Roseman University's property, and they are open to dedicating that over to the city so that we have that part of the right-of-way for the road and the improvements that would be required to help assist with that. And with additional clarification from the applicant being present, they are open to the portion that does cross Roseman's University is considered private on the 1055 west of developing that to what the city would need to make things work right there in that transition.
They're open to it? It hasn't been already included as part of the requirements and recommendations?
Not specific to this project, no. But they are open to doing what they need to do to help make this a smooth transition and with their project and the private portion of 1055 with how narrow it is now and then what the city wants to do with the backside ditch in the future.
Why wouldn't that have made the list of recommendations at this time already?
Right now, for the most part, it's different property, different ownership, and not part of this project. What we were able to is with the knuckle, you can kind of see how there's this opening in the middle, similar to like a commercial ADA access, so that travel can be consistent for those residents. They're not having to like bump up a curb or high-rise gutter pan or something like that is what we were on property that they did own for this project, which is why that's there and the rest south of it is not.
All right. I might come back to that eventually. Did you have questions? Did you? Really?
Not till I'll. If we open up the applicant, the general public.
All right. Okay, I think I got my preliminary ones answered. Is Mr. Hatch present this evening?
Good evening, Council. My name is Devin Hatch. I currently live in Lehigh and hope soon to be living here in King's Landing. So thanks for meeting tonight. To get started, this project, the reason why this is here early is it's been a very, very complicated piece to develop. I want to thank the staff over here that has diligently worked on it over the course of about a year and a half. But we've kind of run out of time. Money has got to be an issue now because it's extended so long. And so trying to push this along into winter is the reason why we're here now. I agree with the attorney's comment on that these items are minor on that list. I think that we pretty much have already got them addressed. You know, a traffic plan or a location of a fire hydrant, those things can be taken care of quite simply. So with that being said, you know, we're hopeful that we can get this approved tonight and move forward and beat winter and get some construction going and get this area looking beautiful. We're excited about it. To answer some of the concerns about that elevation of the road and that access, Roseman, they've been wonderful to work with. They have been great neighbors, and we've been meeting quite a bit in a discussion with that particular area to where that is private land that they own. I've agreed to come in and fix that road along that section because right now it's dilapidated, fallen off. I mean, I'm surprised a car hasn't fallen into that ditch by now. One icy day, and I can imagine that's going to happen. So we're going to clean that up for them, widen that road up a little bit, and make that a smoother transition down through there to make it a safer access, kind of clean up that section where it's probably only 10 feet, 9 foot wide right now on that road, which meets zero codes in the city for safety. So originally we had planned on taking the improvements through there, but since it's private land, we don't own it, we can't improve their land. So that's the reason why we ended up with this layout right here. That grade, you know, in 1055, it's kind of a dip right there, a low point. So by bringing it up, we'll actually make it a safer, flatter road on 1055. So you don't have to dip so deep down into that bottom of that belly. But yeah, with that being said, it's the idea behind this subdivision. We wanted to keep the look and feel of that area, which is why we went with the larger lots and not try to shrink it down to maximize the space. I have personal interest in that since it's going to be my home and where I live. So excited to create something beautiful and add to the city there. So.
And I assume that as you've worked with staff, you are aware of the list of recommendation requirements, let's use that word, that will be necessary, and you are okay with all of those that Andrew stated this evening?
Yes, yeah, we feel confident that we've pretty much got them all ready, addressed, and be able to handle them. Very simple.
Do you still own the two lots west of this?
Yes.
Or the storm?
Yes. Okay.
Sorry, east. I've turned around. I apologize. Mm-hmm. All right, questions for the applicant while we have him up here?
Just a couple. So the other two lots to the east that we just mentioned, do you anticipate that those two lots will also drain into that same detention pond, or is there a different stormwater plan for those two lots?
The lots, the water will also be retained on the lot,
okay.
But what drains to the street will drain at that same pond.
Okay. And then on lots one and two, what direction are, like, I know that we've got the retention wall in the back, but what direction are those homes fronting? Are they facing each other? Are they facing west or east? Or I'm just kind of confused as to how.
Yeah, currently right now they will be facing to the west.
Okay, so you've got the houses to the west, and so your homes will be facing the back side.
Facing
of
the
those.
Back, yeah.
Okay. My notes are a mess, so maybe move on to someone else, and I'll try to sort them out.
Chomping at the bit.
Go ahead.
But I'm stalling. Just on the, of course, the proposed temporary closure of the road to put in, you know, the access to the sewer line. Can you confirm it would be 2 to 3 weeks, as Andrew stated, or do you have any ways to expedite that with the six properties to the south so they can properly access, especially with the weather approaching?
Yeah, with that, it's a great question. The temporary road is probably going to be in better condition than the current road. So as long as we don't hit weather, snow, ice, and that can affect things, which is the reason why we're trying to get going before the weather gets bad. But yeah, the road will be constructed with the compacted road base and hard surface where that it'll be safe, be able to support a fire truck and timing. I want to get it in as quick as possible. But we do have to install a sewer, which we will be improving all the way through there for future development of that area as well. That's an agreement we have with South Valley Sewer. So we've got to put sewer up that whole entire length of road. And where that road is 10 foot, 12 foot wide at best, it will be taking out the majority of that road when we put that sewer line in. So the idea is to get it in as quick as possible and rebuild that road so that it can open back up for the residents of those homes.
Great. And I believe it might be your property just to the northeast corner of this that's already dirt's being moved already. It may not be your property, but I'm just thinking a way to the coordination of work projects or, you know, trucks on the road to make sure that people have access to fire can get through. Will you be able to coordinate that? You know, even the temporary accesses will be fully accessible to the residents and for emergency.
Absolutely. All the time. There'll always have access. There will never be any point in time where there's not access to those homes back there.
Okay. That's all I have for now.
At this point, I just have a question, probably mostly for staff, but I'd be curious for your perspective on that. Like for the temporary road, who has liability for anything that happens on that road? Is that a...
So that's a great question. I guess it depends on where they're at on the road and what happens. Obviously, if they were to hit a construction vehicle or something on that road, it would fall under the construction liability insurance. You know, if they were to just crash on that road, I don't know how that would change. I don't know the legal ramifications of something like that. But
okay. What if the road failed?
Yeah, anything that could happen.
That would fall under the construction insurance.
Okay, because I just want to make sure that
yes.
I hadn't seen that come up, and so the city and you as the applicant make sure that gets addressed. Okay.
We're back to you. Okay. Thank you. Before we do public comment, I would like to move that we take a 5-minute recess.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, we will reconvene at 8:08.
Oh, I knew this one was going to be long. Come on, I got a tea time in the morning. My wife goes, "Are you going to give away your Weber steak tickets?" I go, "No." Thank you.
issues, he collected just those other three that he can't. Found out about that.
All right, I'm going to bring this meeting back to order. Ms. Bevins had one additional question for staff before we do our public comment. I think it's for you, Jeremy.
Sorry. One more on the retention pond. Do we know the depth of that and how that slopes down since it's open? And is it? I'm assuming it's just standard, but I would just like to know.
The depth is... it's 4 feet. We can confirm that with the applicant. It appears to be 4 feet deep. A slope is not shown on here. Okay. Typically, though, it's like a 3-to-1 slope, nothing too steep, and that looks like how these contours are, but it doesn't actually show on this plan what that slope is.
Okay, and there's no water retaining on the actual lots, correct?
Right. Yeah, there's no... Right, they're slopes, so it'll just flow off of those lots and okay. Flow onto the road.
Okay.
Can I clarify that? So that's when it's built, isn't there certain retention requirements for a home has to retain X percent of the water?
I'm not aware of homes. There is no retention on these lots. I'm not aware of that requirement for individual lots. There is some detention. You know, all of this flows into that one detention pond, and it is detained there.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. At this time, I'm going to open up this item to public comment. We'll start with those in our auditorium. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we invite you to come forward, state your name and where you reside for our records, and then you'll have 3 minutes to address the commission. Who'd like to go first? Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Neil Smith, and I have property that borders 1055 further to the south of where the property under consideration is located. And I had expected to come and just listen tonight because I didn't expect there would be anything that might potentially impact my property. But I noticed when one of the plats was up, there was, in addition to the property under consideration tonight, there was, it looked like, if you could put the other one up, we could look at that quickly. Not that one, but not that one. Not that one. That one. The whatever is intended for that road, 1055, apparently further to the south, and it looks like it, I think it says a 40-foot turnaround there. Now, does that have anything to do with what's under consideration tonight?
We'll get that answered during or after public comment.
Okay. I have some concerns about that because when I was under the impression that, you know, we've talked about the knuckle and that there would be changes up to the knuckle, but further to the south, my understanding was that it was a private road and there wouldn't be any changes. Now, tonight, apparently, we learned that it's Rosemont University that owns the road. Is that correct?
We will again confirm.
And my other concern was when Mr. Hatch mentioned the widening and smoothing of the road to the south. I assumed that was the south of the knuckle. And widening, I would think, could be a problem. Is there a possibility of needing to condemn property on the sides of that road? If that's an issue, that could involve me. So those are the two primary concerns that I have that came up just as I was sitting here tonight. As I said, I didn't expect to have anything to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We'll get those answered. Who would like to go next? Please.
My name is Kenyon Clark. I live at 1080 Rivercrest Circle. My back of my property is 1055 West. My property is going to be the lowest point where the road goes. So you're going to build it up. Instead of the water running across and going in the Beckstead ditch, it's going to run down to my property. It just doesn't make sense. Where I went to school, they taught me that water runs downhill. And I'm just afraid that that's really going to be an issue. I did, too, come here tonight, excited to hear that the plan was going to go forward and we'd get some houses and some nice places built next to us rather than where everything's being dumped at this time. We've had people dumping things there, and I was excited. And then I get here without a lack of information. We were not sent any information about these changes at all. I didn't have a chance to study anything out and until I got here, and then everything seemed to turn negative as far as my property is. My property is the one that's probably going to be impacted more than anybody else's property. And I'm really concerned about building up of the road and having that really be an issue, because I have an entrance at the bottom of my property where I drive into once or twice a day sometimes. My garden, and I have things down there. I have very steep property. I can't carry things down. I have to take it down in a truck a lot of times. So it's become a real issue to me. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Clark, can I ask you a question?
You bet.
Just to clarify, are you just north of the property we're discussing then?
I'm just south.
Just south.
I'm down at the bottom. I'm down at the bottom of the hill.
Got it. Thank you.
It's the very lowest point where I enter my property.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
I'm Kalmar Robbins. I live at last night at 106 71 South, 1055 West. I was irrigating last night. The only concern I have is actually for my next door neighbor, Dennis Palmer. He is the property that is to the north, the little square part that is jotting out there as you're going to the north. The two concerns I have is his home actually really does sit very low. There will be sewer brought in, but I'm almost positive his sewer will be below the sewer line that's being brought in, unless somebody can verify that it's much, much deeper than I think it is. I know he talked about from his to his front porch, it drops, I think it's 6 feet, and then you go another 8 to 10 feet below that. He's going to be down about 16 feet below where, if the sewer line is lower than that, is that low, then he could connect to it. But otherwise, he will have to, if he's required to pump, he'd be required to pump his sewer out to the sewer line. And that's, I mean, he's not here because he's taking care of his wife right now. And I just don't think that's a reasonable thing not to be mentioning and covering in that regard. And I'm assuming the reason that the sewer line is being brought to the end of the, going north, because the cul-de-sac that has just been completed on 1055, they raised the road about 4 inches there with new asphalt, which made our entrance into our pasture rather steep, which was fun to encounter. And I've decided I have to be careful that I don't go too far or else I'm going to be falling off that roadway where it has been expanded out, going to the north. But there is an issue with water that we had with that. You had a wonderful storm at the 1st of August that came down and washed out actually all the gravel and stuff we had in our entrance to go into our gateway that got washed away. And they just, I really thought that there was a box there that if it had been designed right, it should have met the elevation that was already there on 1055. And I just worry about when we get into things like this, have we covered all the issues? And I've just had a new experience, and I just want you to be aware of those type of issues.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins.
Yes.
Oh, just thank you.
Oh, okay.
I'm Travis Hyatt, 10885 Country Creek. So I'm on the west side of lots 1 and 2. One of the questions I had was, when will we know a final grade of that private drive up to lots 1 and 2? And then I think it was mentioned that that wall on the west side was 9 feet tall. Is that correct?
Well, there
the wall that curves around the private drive. So I just kind of wondering where we talked about the headlight and the light pollution coming into the windows. I'd like to verify, we're saying it's supposed to be below 10. Is it going to be 9.9? Is it going to be 8? Do we know what that final grade will be? So that's my first question. And we talked about the raising the 2.5 feet out on the road so that could meet that 10% or less grade. Have we checked into the viability of dropping final grade of lots 1 and 2 down instead of raising the road up? So I don't know if it's a cost issue. There's other, you know, issues. I mean, moving a lot of dirt. It seems like dropping final grade may upset water retention and water runoff less than messing with the road and raising, you know, the grade of the road. Question there. And just a few more. I was curious about maximum height requirement for the two houses that are going on lots 1 and 2. At one time when these plot maps were brought up on the west, the very west end of lots 1 and 2, it almost looked like there was like an open space, a real thin open space that looked to me like it denoted where the ditch used to be. There's a ditch now, but the water doesn't run anymore. My question is, what happened to that? Because it seemed like it delineated the property, like it was almost a different use, or actually notating that there was one in running water there. So it's almost as if that's kind of disappeared. That was a question I had. On the knuckle, separating private from public, I know that as the snow plows come around and there's a lot of snow, they're going to make that loop. That's the whole purpose of it, for emergency equipment, snow removal, to make that loop, and so they don't have to do the backing and stuff that they're doing on the private drive. I was curious as to how much more liability it was going to put on the customers to the south. Now they're going to have an extra pile of snow to remove as it meets whatever pile the snow truck's going to make as it makes that loop. So now those residents to south that knuckle are going to have whatever snow there, plus now a nice little pile. We all know how that works when the snowplow comes and pushes all the snow in your driveway. So this is going to be exacerbated by that. And I think that was it. Should be good. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hyatt. Is there anyone else in the auditorium who would like to address the commission on this issue? Please.
Hi, my name is Jared Osman. I live in Sandy. Do you need my address? Okay, 11509 South Black Forest Drive. So I hope to buy a lot from Mr. Hatch and build a house, and we feel very confident about all this. I guess my concern with 1055 is that the road is terrible right now. And so we've been working for a year and a half with staff trying to figure out the best solutions. It's kind of back and forth and back and forth. And we don't want anybody to end up with a puddle down at the bottom of the south. And so right now, the way that road goes from the knuckle, it goes down and then it comes back up. Our raising at 2.5 feet as a contractor, that's what I do for a living. And I do subdivisions, so I'm very familiar with this. I do commercial stuff. But it will create a very smooth transition, actually. By that, 2.5 feet is not that hard to feather out. And as we come back up, obviously, we're not going to let it drain into this man's lot. We'll make sure that we fit city standards and city codes. And so, and when I say we, I mean Mr. Hatch. Obviously, I'm excited to buy a lot. I'm going to buy a lot at the top of the hill and build my house where I plan to stay forever and be a great neighbor. We're going to build, my house will be a single-story home. We're going to be very conscious of lighting, very conscious of how to be good neighbors. We realize change is hard. We realize that tearing all those trees out caused a lot of commotion. We have every desire, and that's been our whole desire this entire time, as I've watched Mr. Hatch put this subdivision together, to be good neighbors, and we want to live here. So we understand the controversy there. We're also very concerned about any transitions coming off this road. We're happy to address transitions. That brand new road's going to bring brand new asphalt. We're bringing in sewer that doesn't exist right now that can connect everybody to it. It's something that Mr. Hatch has really planned through and looked at. We obviously think it's a benefit to the neighborhood. I know that the city council has talked about, you know, the future of 1055. I know that's controversial as well. However, we think what we're doing here with the subdivision, and I hope to buy a lot when it's just all said and done for Mr. Hatch, is going to be beautiful. Currently, as has been stated by the other neighbors, this is kind of a trash dumping area that we would love to get started in cleaning up and creating something really beautiful. But transitions coming onto this road, I think, the way that we are meeting grade requirements that Mr. Hatch has been addressing with the engineers and staff, it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, they feel confident to recommend it to come before you today. We'll solve the problems, fire hydrants and what have you, where replacement is. We're happy to move this along. I'd love to build a house. Currently, I'm in a temporary housing situation, trying to get my house built here for a year and a half. So I know Mr. Hatch is diligent on this. I know he's excited to make this happen. I'm grateful that he's doing this because I want to be here. And I also know, as a builder and a contractor that does commercial work, how these transitions are made. So on these roads, if they come off, and any questions, we're happy to address this. Mr. Hatch actually owns the excavation company that will do the work. So it's not hard for us to bring in whatever is needed to create, and we'll make sure that the drainage issues are not an issue. So anyway, I just wanted to state that. Hopefully you can see we're excited to do this, and we are excited to be great neighbors. So thanks.
Is there anyone else in the auditorium that would like to address the commission at this time? Okay, we're going to go to our Zoom format. Is there anyone online that would like to address the commission? If so, we just ask that you turn on your camera and give us a physical wave. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone online. I'm going to come back to the auditorium one last time. If you haven't addressed the commission and you would like to, this is your opportunity. Okay, I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commission and get some of these questions answered. Could you pull up the picture that showed that 40-foot turnaround? Thank you. Is this just a part of that temporary road that will give them access while the sewers put in? What is that?
That part, I'm not sure. That is Roseman's property, and that appears to be right over where the line would go. Temporary access would either be with further details submitted on the options and what would be better suited and on how they have to be designed and the grade for that, would either be where 1055, if you follow this sewer line to where it's heading west and then it heads north, some sort of bypass right there or further south of this turnaround. This caption that says pipe crossing storm drain directly across from that. They have like a makeshift bridge that Roseman uses to access their two properties right here on the west side of the trail and the canal. And that parcel would be an option for a road. The applicant can get more specific into their dealings with the South Valley Sewer District on the sewer line in relation to that approval process, if that was a requirement for them for some sort of access reason, possible manhole clearance or clean out or something like that.
Drew, I believe what I heard from engineering, I believe the preferred option that the applicant is currently pursuing is to put the temporary road on that lot 5. And just to divert the road to the west temporarily while the sewer is constructed. I believe that's the alternative they're pursuing right now, rather than doing a complete, you know, alternate route. But that could be confirmed with the applicant.
Okay. But just to clarify, to answer the question from public comment, that 40-foot off-road turnaround has nothing to do with this application. This is just something that you pulled and it happened to be there.
That was what was part of the plan. It doesn't have anything to do with the accessing the subdivision or these 6 properties south of where that construction would be.
Okay, thank you. Who owns the frontage on lot, let's just say south of the knuckle along whatever that lot number is? 5.
Roseman.
Roseman, okay.
Yeah, and the part of 1055 is private over, technically, what is their property?
Oh, so it's just, is it an access? Like, easement, agreement, even though Roseman owns it?
There's nothing really official that we can find. It's just kind of how it's been. They just own the land that the road is on. But the city has met with Roseman, both just us and them in conjunction with the applicant, and they are open to dedicating that to the city so that we could possibly improve what is now the private part of 1055 at some point in the future, which isn't anytime soon or pending, just possible.
So not maybe a part of what's being discussed mm-hmm. tonight. So back to something I thought we'd cleared up earlier, but maybe not. When they raise the part of 1055 that's to the knuckle, And then north along lots?
Four or five.
Four? Four, okay. That's the only portion that will be raised, and all of the grading back down to the existing road will occur prior to that knuckle, or will require going onto the portion that Rosemond owns? Will changes happen south of the knuckle?
Yes. Yeah, they'll have to grade down because that knuckle will be elevated the 2.5 feet. And so then then south of that, they'll slope down the 2.5 feet. And just as the gentleman mentioned, they'll feather that in so it's a smooth transition.
And is that in the list of recommendations just to ensure that meets the city code and requirements? Or is that in the...
It's on the grading plan. It's okay. Shown on the grading plan that's in the packet.
And so that's already been approved and is not in this list of recommendations that still have to be put in place?
No, that portion of it is not a recommendation.
Okay. So engineering feels like that's been satisfied at this time with...
Correct.
What's before us. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Will this grading require the condemning any other property? It will just impact Rosemond's property, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it'll impact Rosemond's property and then also the property, as we mentioned, to the east, which is owned by the developer, currently owned by Mr. Hatch.
Okay. Do you feel like the grading addresses any concerns about water inadvertently being diverted to other properties? The gentleman just to the south of this had concerns
about
his point in the road.
I believe this plan adequately addresses that concern. If you show the grading plan, it's hard to see here, but if you look at the contour lines, you can see along that south property line, there's a drainage ditch that drains to the east, and then there's a pipe that goes under 1055 and then discharges into the Beckstead ditch. And then also 1055 itself is going to be sloped to the east to just kind of let that water flow the way it's historically gone.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we from an engineering perspective, we didn't see concerns with this.
So, Jeremy, just to confirm, that ditch on the south end of the property and under 1055, there's not going to really be any adjustments to that. It will continue to exist as it exists right now.
Yeah, and actually, that's interesting. I actually didn't notice there was a ditch on that south property line. So if there is one, there's a ditch shown on this grading plan as well. So, there will be a ditch there on that south property line.
Okay. These may be out of order. I apologize. Can you comment on the final grade of the private drive? I think it was in the staff packet, but can you tell us what that grade is?
We should probably, there's not a really good, in this packet, there's not an actual profile of that wall. And so it's a little bit hard to, I'm just looking at the contours. It looks like at the peak, it's about 10 feet, probably 9 feet. We could confirm that with the applicant. Keep in mind, that's kind of the peak, you know, the highest point of the retaining wall from what I can gather from these plans.
And then the concern about light pollution. So it's not a it is a retaining wall at the top. Was that height specifically selected and paired with the grading of the road to prevent light pollution from going into the adjacent properties?
The retaining wall, no, that wasn't for light pollution. I believe, I think there's a, is it the Rhino Rock fence along the west side that's 6 feet high?
Yes, 6 foot Rhino Rock in addition to...
The retaining wall.
Yeah, well, that and a finished grade of 4,393 feet on the west boundary line.
And so is there any analysis done to determine if that's sufficient to block light from a standard car?
Staff didn't require
a light analysis from a headlight. With the changing in the elevations, that retaining wall, the one that's along the east side of lots 1 and 2 is consistently 9 feet with 6 inches below grade. So it's under 10 to meet code requirements there. The one that curves is a little different because its exposure changes as you increase in grade going around. Mm-hmm. But it's still sufficient to satisfy engineering and building department's review of the retaining wall permit that actually is ready for issuance.
Okay. Any comment on a 2.5-foot drop on the lots versus raising the road? Is that something the city considered asking? Do you have any feedback there?
I know when the civil engineering was done, they were trying to balance the cuts and fills, the amount of material they were having to take off, haul off the site, or import into the site.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the design that they optimized. And so, anyway, that's probably all I can say to that.
Okay. And you commented on the maximum height being 10 feet, right?
For the retaining wall?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and then west boundary ditch. Oh, there was a comment that something on the west boundary was previous in, or was shown in previous site plans, but not shown now.
There was never a site plan that showed a ditch. I believe the comment is referring to the parcel itself. Currently, this subdivision is 4 separate parcels of 4 different sizes and dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of look, it's all addressed to the same address. So the one that's along the west boundary is a really narrow, elongated, rectangular parcel.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ditch or drainage there. The property to the north did have an egress and ingress easement, but they've since recorded what they've needed to abandon it, so it doesn't exist anymore to date. And from conversations with the applicant, and the applicant can confirm, they are at the end of a private irrigation line, and they are abandoning, essentially abandoning the rights to those, but abandoning it in place instead of going through everyone's properties and removing the line. The box, there was a irrigation box there that was damaged, which is this project is removing. So there isn't that huge flood water anymore that's been historically running over the property because someone did damage that irrigation box.
Okay.
So they just cap it essentially because they're abandoning it in place. Is that kind of what's going to happen? They're just going to cap that box off? Or I can ask the applicant if that's better.
I would confirm with how the applicant wants to handle their water rights.
Okay.
But they're just leaving the system in place because it does run through private property to the west.
Okay, thanks.
How do emergency vehicles get to these properties right now? I drove that road today, and it's very narrow. I had to pull over to let a car by. Can an emergency vehicle get by there, get back there?
I'm certain they can. I don't know.
Can they get out?
Of it, though. It's a great question. Yeah, okay. It is very narrow, especially along this section is particularly narrow.
Okay. We talked about the road change impacting where water flows. And you've indicated that staff has reviewed that and is satisfied with the retention plan and the road grading and the property grading. So that has been evaluated and approved?
Yes.
Okay. The sewer, how do these properties get sewer access now? Are they connected to South Valley Sewers services?
I don't believe so, no. They need that new sewer line for lots 1 through 4. And then there is an existing sewer line that's kind of just on the west side of the cul-de-sac that can service lots 1 and 2.
How will that impact the neighbor to the north? We had a concern about it possibly changing his service, or it might have also been a concern that he would not be eligible for the new service. Can you please tell us what you know about that?
I don't know. I don't know on that. South Valley Sewer District is handling the design of that sewer main. And I, unfortunately, with our GIS maps, I'm not even showing how that resident, what was his name, Mr.
Dennis Palmer.
Palmer, yeah, Mr. Palmer. I don't show how he currently has sewer. And so I can't really speak to that one.
I'm not sure how to articulate my concern on that.
So I think, so if a resident is going to be, a neighboring resident will be materially impacted by the new sewer design, is it that resident's responsibility to pay the finances to make the sewer work, or would the new this application or the sewer district be responsible for providing service to him? Or is this going to be an undue financial burden on a resident? It's not part of this application.
I don't believe this will impact his service in any way. This will be a new pipe in the road. If he elects to tie into that pipe, then he could, you know, he could work with South Valley Sewer District to make that connection. But I'm not aware of South Valley Sewer District cutting anyone off or making any modifications to existing sewer services.
In conversation with the building department, recalling that state law requires if you're within 300 feet, you have to tie into the system. And so 10911 South, 1055 West would meet that requirement, which at some point they will have to, given that it's also a requirement that South Valley outlined in their conditional approvals for the septic that they have on their property.
I didn't understand the very last part of what you said.
The septic on these properties, and specifically the property of 10911 South that runs adjacent to the new sewer line and Roseman University's property, they were given conditional approval from South Valley to have their septic system, and really in addition to some other stuff that they've done on the property. But once a sewer line is available, they have to connect. It supersedes their approval, and their conditional approval goes away once that line is put into place.
Is there a timeline for them to comply with that once it goes into place?
That was unclear in their documentation. It would have to be expressed through the district themselves, being their approval and their rules and how they go about enforcing.
But because that's between the South Valley District and that property owner, that would be not something under the purview of the city. That would be between that utility,
right,
and the...
However they enforce it.
Even though we're potentially approving...
Mm-hmm. And the same approvals might apply to everyone else south of there who are on septics. It kind of just depends on what your paperwork said at the time.
So, Mr. Simons, I'm not sure, does that open the city up for any liability by it if we were to approve this application this evening for the homeowner? But, or is that completely a different civil matter between that homeowner and the utility?
Well, if you breathe, you incur liability.
I want to protect the city. I want to make sure that, you know, we're not opening up the city for any risk here.
We're not.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. The snow. Who is responsible for the snow? We've all been there where the plow goes by and you've just shoveled and now your driveway is buried again. Is this private lane going to be responsible for removing a cul-de-sac worth of snow to have access?
I know that Public Works has been plowing at least the public portion of 1055 West. There's a large, based on the plan, the plan is for the snow to be stored at the top of the cul-de-sac, not at the knuckle. And I don't see a, I don't see a city worker, you know, piling all the snow right in front of an access. I don't see that happening. If it did happen, then residents could certainly call and complain to the city, and they would take care of it.
Okay. Did I touch on everything? Okay. Did we have questions for the applicant? I have a note about water rights, but that was it. And I think that's just because staff suggested we...
I have one form about the irrigation rights and the cap.
Like that's what it was. Okay, great. Mr. Hatch, are you game to come and answer a couple more questions? Thank you.
So I guess my only question is, if you're abandoning the irrigation rights in place because the current box is damaged, it's probably not material, but I'm curious, are you just going to cap it and leave it?
Yeah, so currently the box now has a big hole knocked in the side of it, and they, I don't know, the past owners were using it to kind of flood that area.
Sure.
But now they can't control it because it's just a big hole. The plan is to, we're going to patch that box, that hole up, so that it will work as intended, and then cover that area up. So
just bury it?
Yep.
Okay. So are there any concerns? I mean, I know in my yard, my PVC pipes occasionally give out because I use crappy glue or something. I know this is a different scale, but are there any concerns that 10 or 20 years down the road, your patch fails and it floods out the homeowner?
The homeowner would be me, so yeah, I have great concerns. So yeah,
okay, great.
No concerns there. We're going to patch it up great.
Yeah,
in fact, I'll personally make sure it's patched up.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? I have great answers for all those questions.
Yeah. What is the latest you could start construction and complete the desired proportion this year before?
The only restrictions we would have is asphalt with temperatures. Other than that, usually we can work with anything as far as throughout the year in the winter. Even pouring concrete, we can blanket and heat and get concrete down. The only restriction would be asphalt.
So how does, can I ask you this question? You expressed a desire to complete it earlier. How does this impact the cost of construction if it doesn't impact?
It's obviously, construction in winter is obviously more costly. So the further we get into the season, the more cost I will incur to develop this. So we're trying to get as far as forward as possible to beat the weather. Frost in the ground does affect development, and so we'd like to avoid as much frost as possible. And mud.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I can answer the turnaround question if you want about that.
Sure.
That's all on Roseman's property, and that turnaround is just an access for that manhole that'll be installed there for the sewer district to clean that manhole out.
Oh, that.
And that's their future parking lot, so that will be eventually removed, and their parking lot will be there.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Is there any way I can clarify a couple of questions? Because they didn't get answered.
Oh, Ms. Bevins reminded me of one question we didn't get answered. Could you please, for the record, Andrew, let us know what the maximum building height is in this zone? We had one citizen indicate they plan to buy a lot up on the hill, and he was going to make a one-story home, but just so that it's on public record, what is the maximum building height allowed on the homes?
Overall, 35 feet to your highest peak.
35 feet to your highest.
In a residential zone property.
And that's standard through?
Throughout the residential.
Except for daybreak. Okay. Did I miss any other questions? All right, commissioners, thoughts?
I have one more question for Jeremy.
Sure.
So, Jeremy, you mentioned that they plan to store snow at the top of the cul-de-sac. Is there any concern with snow melt overwhelming that drainage ditch in the spring if we have a winter like we have this year? I know it says 100-year retention pond, but is there any concern with that coming straight down and overwhelming that ditch all at once? Not ditch, retention pond, sorry.
I mean, it's always a concern. If it exceeds, you know, the engineering design, then that's certainly a concern. But it meets our engineering requirements, you know, our storm requirements, which is a 24-hour, 100-year storm. Okay. And so it meets that volume. If it exceeds that volume, then yeah, it's going to run over the pond and it'll likely go into the ditch, into the Beckstead ditch.
Okay. I had one question as well. We've seen in North Salt Lake when retention walls give out to landslides. Is the city culpable at all? Should they approve a retention wall and it fails? Or is that whoever manufactured the wall? Are we taking on any liability as a city when we approve extreme retaining walls?
I mean, liability, that would be Mr. Simonson. Engineering-wise, though, I mean, a 9-foot wall there's a lot of 9-foot walls. I wouldn't consider that extreme.
Okay. I just read news articles when things like that happen that they say, why did the city let them do that? And I always wonder why it's the city's fault. So you could clarify.
Well, these things are always complicated. I mean, as you know, this last winter we saw two houses fall off the edge in Draper. Now, somebody in the city at some point looked at some engineering plans that were submitted to the city, and they probably met city standards, but somehow it still failed, and those things do happen. But as far as liability goes, you end up, everybody gets sued. I mean, everybody gets named in a lawsuit in those circumstances. Generally speaking, there's this thing called the Governmental Immunity Act. And when it comes down to a government acting within the functions of what they're supposed to be doing, such as inspecting homes and approving engineering and so forth, usually the Governmental Immunity Act is going to bar those claims against the city. Not always, but there's, you know, you read through 10 pages of single-page statute to look at the exceptions and the exceptions to the exceptions, but that's generally the result.
Okay. Commissioners, further discussion or thoughts on this item?
I'll go first. Okay. That way. So I think they've come back since we've seen this, you know, the rezone and, you know, this area, you know, several times with various proposals. So I think they've done a very good job to try to address this. This is a very unique property as well. And I think they're going to do a very good job. However, my one concern is all the recommendations recommendations that are provided, you know, 6, maybe 7 that we've been presented. And I'm just afraid that, you know, the commission, you know, setting a precedent for future applications of properties where, oh, we want to speed this along, so here's some recommendations that we haven't got the final plans in or haven't been approved by the engineering, fire safety, whatever department that might be. Even though we have a great staff, just as the approving body for these types of things, I'm just not comfortable. So while I'm overall in favor of this application, I'm going to just vote no, just because I don't want to set a precedent for future applications, that if they want to fast track that and everything might not have their I's dotted and T's crossed, that, you know, that we've set a precedent. And so I think they've done it, and everything will be addressed, but just how it's been presented this evening, I am opposed to this evening.
Okay. Commissioner Campbell?
Similar to Commissioner Gedge, I do have definitely some concerns about the timing. I think it's an interesting project, and it has some difficult costs, right? And there's a challenge from the applicant's perspective of how much to invest in the design and development in the years and having the confidence that it'll get approved. I too think that given all the constraints, it feels pretty good. I am concerned about the number of outstanding items on the list and the precedence that sets, especially where mostly it is around lowering the development costs to speed up, as I understand it, for, you know, to lower the winter costs. So I'm still making my decision how I might vote, but I'm right on the edge.
Okay, Commissioner Darby.
I think Mr. Gedge stated something that was I'm in agreement with, but I, based on the fact that our city staff, who I trust a great deal, based on the fact that they brought this to us, I would probably approve this one. But if more came forward, I would just say no, no more. I'm okay with this particular project moving forward as long as they're willing to meet the recommendations. So I would probably vote for approval tonight. And then maybe we could have a conversation to kind of understand internally why this one came forward with so many extra requirements that hadn't been met yet.
Okay. Commissioner Bevins.
Can I ask Mr. Schindler a question real quick?
He's been lonely tonight. We haven't used him at all.
Sorry, we've neglected you.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, so we have this list of like items that are outstanding. All of those will have to be met prior to final plat being approved and recorded, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so based on that, I'm okay with this, knowing I also, most people know I have my hand in construction a little bit with some of my clients, that I totally understand the cost of concrete goes insanely high after frost hits, and asphalt at a certain point they will not pour until spring, so I understand some of those constraints. I do share the concerns that this came to us without having those met, but knowing that they will be met prior to being recorded and they can't start development until it's recorded, I'm okay voting this through and allowing it to pass.
Okay. I don't have anything additional to add to the conversation that's been had tonight. I think our concerns are the same. I think they've been voiced to staff, and I think we're probably ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I have one other thing that I might share with the commission tonight as we contemplate the language of the motion. I would feel more comfortable if we don't refer to them as recommendations, because they don't feel like recommendations. Okay. They are in the recommendation section, but they seem to be titled around the department approvals and reviews.
I'm okay with you adding in the exact language, not recommendation, but approval of the following items.
The department reviews and approvals.
And if you want to read them, that would be fine too.
I think I don't have to necessarily read them, because we can reference them in the packet like we have in the past. I just want to make, I just wanted a little clearer language that these are not recommendations.
These are requirements.
These are requirements in the recommendation section.
Andrew, you mentioned that some of the language had changed from what we have to what you read. Is that correct?
Correct. The recommendation is different from the report.
So do we need to substitute what Andrew's recommendations or requirements were, not what's in the packet as published?
We should review those then. How are they different?
That's what you get for now.
It wasn't me this time.
With additional information that became available and the circumstances of this application being a little different than what's normally presented, the recommendation was specified to include language on A, B, and C before construction commences to make it clear and concise, clarifying what needs to be done with the stormwater maintenance agreement and the stormwater easement paperwork, clarifying that this subdivision is required to have a retaining wall permit, which at the time of submission was still pending review, but is now ready for issuance at this point tonight. But it was clarified by the building department that construction on the retaining wall is not to commence without an issued grading permit, and the final submittal of the civil plans are approved by the city engineer to lock everything down before you can start constructing. Clarification on the fire hydrant. The engineering and public works, what's still pending with them in relation to their water calculations, their water plan, the storm drain, which is a huge thing for the storm drain system not existing and what they're proposing to do, clarifying continuous access on their temporary detour for construction and who needs to finalize and approve that, and then just including the encroachment permit as well through the engineering department before construction is allowed to commence.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, my question would be, like, that's a lot to reconcile against the written record. We might be able to say, as presented tonight, that leaves it fairly vague, unless we were to say something like, as presented tonight and recorded in the minutes, but then that requires, that's essentially, those aren't approved until the next meeting, so assuming we have a meeting in 2 weeks, or, you know, that's, I don't know, I mean, and then you're almost as if you held the item to the next meeting, but anyway, I don't know.
Or
something else.
Or, and even though I won't be making the motion on this item, if Andrew happens to have those revisions in writing that he could present to one of the commissioners to make in their motion, that would assist you in making that motion.
He did read them into the record earlier when he made his staff report. So we could just reference that.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you read them verbatim, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So can we just reference as he read them into the record during staff report?
I could be okay with that. I mean, as long as that's good enough.
Is that good enough for you guys? Okay.
Mr. Cantwell, I think you're our man. I'm ready for motion. No pressure.
Oh, no, I'm good. I was trying to read off my phone. Thank you, Commissioner Gedge. All right. Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Please.
I move that the Planning Commission approve the King's Landing Preliminary Subdivision Plat, file number PLPP 2023-00080, subject to the list of requirements. Subject to the list of requirements that were presented, updated requirements that were presented in our meeting tonight by the city staff.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there any discussion on that motion? Are we happy with how it's stated? Okay, I'll second that motion. Ms. Valdez?
Commissioner Cantwell?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Gitch?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Darby?
Yes.
And Commissioner Evans?
Yes. Okay, this item will pass 4-0. I'd like to issue the same thanks to the citizens. 4-1. What did I say?
4-0.
Oh my goodness, I'm tired. You count. You count, I promise. I'd like to thank everybody for participating tonight. We do appreciate the input. We appreciate the evidence that's presented and the concerns that are brought to us. Mr. Hatch, we wish you the best with this development and in completing those 6 requirements ahead of having this formally approved.
And Madam Chair, can I just chime in real quick?
Sure.
You know, I fully support Mr. Hatch, what he's going to do. It's just, again, like I said in my comment, it's just for the precedence for future applicants of other properties. And I think, like Commissioner Darby said, maybe we're going to have a good discussion with staff at our next training of the circumstances that brought towards us this evening and how we can prevent those in the future.
Certainly. Okay, we do not have any legislative business this evening, so staff, is there any other business?
I'll say it loud enough for the record, no, there's not.
Mr. Simonson, what are you going to train us on in 2 weeks?
Well, we might have to go a different direction based on the comments that we just heard from Commissioner Gedge. Maybe we ought to talk about preliminary subdivision plat versus final subdivision plat review and what happens between those two. I think Mr. Schindler is going to be talking about. Why don't you tell him what you're going to be talking about?
We're excited.
I was going to be talking to you about the noticing requirements and why some noticing requirements are different than others and so forth, and how we have to notice basically each different application or whatever, how the notice is different.
Okay.
Great.
Those are both great.
I have a question about that.
Sure.
Could you also help us understand if maybe we could look at some examples of noticing, because several members of the public in the past few meetings have mentioned that they weren't apprised of the whole scenario. And we know that the whole scenario is held in the packet. And I'm wondering if in the noticing they're being told, look in the packet.
I would like to see some notices. That would be a great part of it.
Yeah, I can get those. I think our notices are probably different. Each person probably has a little bit of different way of noticing and putting notices.
Just like the staff reports.
Right. I know that the ones I do say that if you want more information, you can. It's available. At City Hall, and you can come in and do that. But it's a good point. Maybe I should also say that you can view it in the packet online.
Yeah.
Within 3 days before the meeting. That's at least 3 days before the meeting is when it's posted. It's actually more than 3 days, but.
And that's the only reason I brought it up, because we've heard that I think twice in the past two meetings, and I was a little surprised. I've never heard that before from a member of the public, and I thought, I'm wondering if they're not reading it carefully, or if they're not seeing something, or if something's not there. So I was just curious.
Yeah, it is interesting that way, because we should be putting that in our notices, because we don't put all the information in there. I mean, we rely because we can't. And so that's, giving them a way to find that out before the meeting, even though it's only maybe 4 or 5 days before the meeting, but still they can find out those things. Actually, if they want to come into City Hall, they can get more information as soon as the notice they received, they can come in any time.
All right. I don't think we have anything else, right?
No, just a thank you. That turned into a lot more than I think any of us anticipated. So staff, thank you for all your patience with all of our questions and all of us.
Madam Chair, I move to adjourn.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Yes. Aye.